This is John Lothian. On July 16th, 2020, Tom Chippas, the CEO of ErisX, gave a presentation to the Technology Advisory Committee of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission about Bitcoin, its volatility, and how it compared to other key popular trading products, including Tesla, GE, Bank of America, and gold. Chippas is a member of the TAC, as it is called, and its cryptocurrency subcommittee. I interviewed Chippas about his presentation, what he found, and what conclusions he came to about market structure as a result of the data he presented. Here is our interview. Why were you asked to present at the Technology Advisory Committee about Bitcoin? What were the reasons, you know, the commission was interested in the subject?
I'm a member of the CFTC Technology Advisory Committee, and I'm also a member of the Virtual Currency Subcommittee of the Technology Advisory Committee. So oftentimes, questions are put to the Virtual Currency Subcommittee of a general nature and of a specific nature. So there's a general question put to us that, upon reflection of some of the volatility in other commodities earlier this year, crude oil being an easily accessible example for many, what were the volatility characteristics of Bitcoin? And was it more or less volatile? Is there insight as to what could drive that volatility? And what does it look like compared to other commodities in the market? I took that and extended it to also include some commonly known or familiar equities, just to provide greater context. So it's one of the purposes of the Virtual Currency Subcommittee to try and shed some light on questions and try and generate some insights that are valuable to the committee and the commissioners and the interested public at large.
Can you talk about Bitcoin volatility and how it relates to the patterns you see in the equity markets?
You know, we sat down and decided to look at Bitcoin and Ether. So Bitcoin versus Ether, as well as some commonly known equities, Apple, Amazon, Bank of America, General Electric. We utilized some of the underlying ETFs to represent gold, as well as the S&P 500. We used Spider. We also included Tesla on the equity side as well, so that's something that gets a lot of airtime from a trading perspective. And then we also included crude. And the purpose of this was to provide a broad array of comparisons across different asset classes versus Bitcoin. And I think that some of the results were interesting. So, you know, some of the key findings, you know, we observed that Bitcoin on average is more volatile than some of those large cap US stocks I mentioned, although some of those stocks have similar and at sometimes greater volatility than Bitcoin, but also there are small cap stocks that have far greater volatility as well too. So that was one of the first things that we found. We also found that the current volatility of Bitcoin and the market structure of some of the non-US crypto derivative platforms that offer very high leverage, 50 to 100, sometimes more than 100 times leverage, can create conditions for very sharp price movements in crypto, in Bitcoin, that are unrelated to market fundamentals. And we'll give you an example of that if you'd like in a moment. And really, one of the other observations was that as Bitcoin and its market structure matures and potentially comes under greater oversight, as participants and exchanges, you know, are expanding their reach in more developed markets, be it ErisX in the US or other similar regulated markets, we think that there'll be benefits to the asset class to reduce volatility, albeit there are going to be these marketplaces that operate outside the purview of the CFTC, for example. And then lastly, you know, a professionally run trading venue and the benefits of a highly reliable infrastructure, the benefits of real-time and post-trade market surveillance, and strong operations, we think will actually be a competitive alternative. So it might give a reason for participants to come to regulated markets, those overseen by, for example, the CFTC, as opposed to some of the lightly regulated or non-regulated marketplaces we've seen. So there's more to it than simply the underlying asset moving around. There are some market structure characteristics that we think have a component to play in answering what is the volatility of Bitcoin. And that's really some of the observations and conclusions reached from the analysis, which I can dig into.
So let's dig into them. What did you find?
When performing an analysis like this, you have to do some basic things. So the first thing we did is let's pick a period to look at. So we picked the period January 2019 to June of 2020. And what we found is Bitcoin and Ethereum, not surprisingly, on average, are more volatile than some traditional stocks. But as I indicated in my summary of the findings, some stocks experience periods where their volatility is substantially higher than Bitcoin and Ether. On 29% of the days we reviewed in that time period, Tesla's volatility was higher than Bitcoin's volatility. And in fact, through February of 2020, Tesla's volatility was more than double Bitcoin's volatility. So there's just one example. Other stocks like General Electric or Bank of America also had periods of higher volatility as compared to Bitcoin. With that said, gold's volatility, much lower than Bitcoin's volatility overall, which, you know, if you're a gold bug, maybe you weren't surprised by that, but I think some folks may be. And, you know, crude oil is a bit of a standout in the sense that its volatility has been above Bitcoin on several occasions, but particularly during that whole April to May period where we saw, you know, negative prices and what have you on the futures. And we saw volatility roughly 2.5 times that of Bitcoin. So taken together, Bitcoin and Ether may have had higher volatility at some points in time, but there are more than enough examples in this very small sample set that we've drawn where the volatility of Bitcoin was lower than that of these assets.
How did Bitcoin perform during the COVID period as relative to some of the other markets?
So we took a look at the COVID outbreak period of March 2020 through June 2020, and we compared it to January 19 to February 2020. And of all the stocks I mentioned, in that group, their volatility went up 265% versus Bitcoin, which was up 178% in that period, and Ether was up 188%. So GE, Tesla, and crude also had volatility increases during that COVID period that are on par with or greater than Bitcoin or Ethereum. So even during what was a highly volatile time in the markets, the change in volatility of Bitcoin and Ether, they're not outliers. They're definitely not outliers. They're right in there with household names like General Electric. And crude, I mean, crude was an outlier again for the reasons I specified, right? I think it was a unique overlap in time of the COVID outbreak period and the pricing that we saw take place in crude. So, you know, you would expect volatility to increase in these periods, but Bitcoin and Ether, in our analysis, were not outliers.
Tell me about the Bitcoin crash in March and the BitMEX liquidations and any lessons learned from that.
To set the context for those that maybe aren't as familiar, so BitMEX is a platform that operates outside the U.S., not available to U.S. persons. And they you know, they have a novel innovation, a perpetual future. And that perpetual future has a socialized loss concept to it from a clearing perspective. So if you think about the traditional waterfalls that we look at in the U.S. in derivatives clearinghouses, the BitMEX implementation is a socialized construct. And there's some great write-ups on their blog. They're very transparent, have a lot of detail. I'd recommend reading it if you want more detail in those regards. But specific to the event in question, when there was a, you know, so-called Bitcoin crash in March of 2020, around 9 a.m. UTC, which is 5 a.m. Eastern, I want to say, there was a decrease in Bitcoin price from $7,300 to $3,900. So that's obviously substantial and marked. During that period, about $1.1 billion worth of contracts were liquidated on the BitMEX platform. So a valuation period came, collateral was valued, and an automated liquidation resulted. And that's how their platform works. And that created selling pressure in the market, which obviously could be pointed to as exacerbating the Bitcoin price drop. So at this point in time, you have these perpetual futures, you have an automated liquidation event, and you have the attendant selling pressure on the spot commodity as those liquidations are being fed into the spot markets. At that same point in time, BitMEX suffered a distributed denial of service attack. This is something you can look up and read more about, but in short, a distributed denial of service attack attempts to overwhelm a website with requests to a point that it can't actually service legitimate requests for interaction. And this happened around 2 a.m. and lasted about 45 minutes on the 13th, 2 a.m. UTC. And again, BitMEX actually put on an excellent explanation of what occurred. This is all in the public domain. And what happened is it caused their liquidation engine to stop sending liquidation orders into the spot market for a period of time. And this, of course, alleviated some of the selling pressure on the spot commodity. And during this period, you know, Bitcoin prices retraced and rose about 23%. So what's interesting here? What's notable here? First and foremost, I'd say the selling pressure was a market structure induced period of volatility, in our opinion. Specifically, knowing these liquidations were taking place, knowing the size of the liquidations, there was pressure in the spot market as that collateral was being liquidated to address the waterfall. Secondly, and not necessarily planned, of course, having a distributed denial of service attack, pausing that liquidation event gave us a very interesting period of analysis, of control, as it were, to see whether or not, well, are the liquidations, you know, a big driver of the price drop in Bitcoin? And I think by looking at this data, unequivocally, it was, because as soon as the liquidations were paused, the price retraced 23%. Now, I don't want to imply that these are the sole causes, and, you know, correlation is not necessarily causation, always a good axiom when looking at statistics. But I think there's a lot to take away from here for perhaps further analysis and discussion about what sort of market structures are in place now that might invite greater periods of volatility, even though the overall asset volatility perhaps isn't greater than other stocks or things that we look at.
So what do you think the CFTC took away from your analysis here? What kind of feedback did you get?
I would say post the presentation, at this stage, I haven't received any direct feedback other than this was insightful, good data, interesting analysis. You know, so no one's come to me and said, aha, or anything yeah. like that, which I wouldn't expect, right? This is more of a what I would view as an interesting point in time to look at the volatility of Bitcoin, reflect upon where it is today and over the historical period we've analyzed, and maybe it provides an interesting point of comparison at some other point in the future to see how things have evolved, how they've changed. So with all that said, what I think most people took away is that because Bitcoin and Ether are not always the most volatile and their change in volatility wasn't greater than some of the other equities and commodities we looked at, that the correlation of Bitcoin and Ether versus US dollar, when I think about the pair there that we analyzed, BTC, ETH, BTC USD, ETH USD. When you compare both of those to stocks or gold, you know, the measures aren't consistent over the measurement period. And, you know, the short period of negative correlation that we saw, meaning moving opposite to one another of Bitcoin versus gold during March of this year, is probably a reversion, right? We sort of got away from the positive correlation and it reverted back. So I think what we start to take away when you look at some of the correlation data and the volatility data is that, you know, we saw during the pandemic correlation increase, which probably wouldn't be unexpected if you had to guess. The biggest change was that of ETH and BTC versus gold. And I just commented on that. It was previously zero and then rose to about 60% during the pandemic outbreak period and then reverted. And that the data generally shows Bitcoin and Ether are not correlated with the stock market nor gold. But under extreme market condition, correlation rises across all of these commodities and assets. And I think it's super important to note that the period of time we analyzed and the stocks or indices that we picked yielded these results. Other results will be yielded if you change the time period or change the constituents. And moreover, as Bitcoin and Ether and cryptocurrencies mature, what I hope it took away is there's room for improvements in how we manage volatility. And as market participants engage in surveilled markets with oversight, we should expect these measures to change. And I'm not trying to imply that apply regulation and mature market structures, ergo volatility goes down. I mean, look at crude, for example. But what I am saying is that we should expect these measures to change. There is a market structure dynamic to look at here and what's happened outside of the purview of the CFTC. We should be informed by that and thoughtful about how we apply regulation in our markets here. And I think one of the, you know, if there's a selling point to regulation, is that the markets and the structures we have in place in the U.S. can invite a decrease in that volatility, or at least more control around it within our markets. But I think the question we'll have to keep asking ourselves is, if Bitcoin is a 24-hour a day, 7-day a week commodity that trades globally, to what extent should we try and control the volatility? And more importantly, what should we do to mitigate its impact and make sure that we have robust controls and intermediaries, as well as exchanges and clearinghouses, to just address those periods of volatility, because you won't be able to control it away for something that trades outside of their purview. So that's a lot in answering your question, but I think this presentation probably opened up more questions than it answered, which really was the intent. It's a new area of exploration and discussion for all of us.